Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is June 26th, 2026. And our top story this morning, once again, we have got some wild tech volatility that is underway in markets. A lot has happened since we spoke last. Yesterday morning on the show, we were talking about how tech stocks were ripping on those wonderful Micron earnings, that big beat and raise we got from Micron. And then, as soon as the opening bell rang yesterday, we had a 1,000-point swing in the NASDAQ from up several hundred points to down several hundred points in a span of about 25 minutes. The NASDAQ dropped 1,000 points. It would recover some of those, and it ended up closing down a few hundred points for the day. So, what happened yesterday? We did talk about the Apple price hikes on the stream. That news had just broken within minutes of me hitting the record button. Apple was raising the price of their MacBooks and iPads due to the memory price increases. And Apple stock would drop like 6% yesterday on that news. A few minutes after Apple's news came out, we got similar news from Microsoft that they're implementing similar price hikes for the Xbox, also because of memory shortages, because of all this misallocation of capital to build data centers. It's driving up the price of everyday items, causing AI inflation. Well, that's later on in the day. That story would be combined with a story from the New York Times that OpenAI is considering delaying their IPO until 2027, citing bank worries about volatility in tech stocks, possibly dampening retail investor enthusiasm. Do you think maybe? I mean, retail investor enthusiasm, this world is more over-levered long AI and tech and chip stocks than at any point in history, especially overseas, where like South Koreans have sold their life insurance policies in order to buy stocks and levered ETFs. Oh, that's going to end so well for those people. Yeah, you think maybe investor enthusiasm could be a little dampened here? I'd say we're starting from a pretty dry place. So yeah, we could further dampen from here. Now, as those worries in that OpenAI delay story came out, and by the way, I think OpenAI has now missed their window for a successful IPO. I mean, if anybody's going to buy anything, it's going to be Anthropic at this point. SpaceX has already gobbled up a bunch of liquidity. SK Hynix is issuing American ADRs. Google has that big $85 billion offering. Meta's right behind them with tens of billions. Everybody is issuing stock. There's going to be nothing left for OpenAI by the time they IPO. All of this volatility culminated yesterday when South Korea last night in their trading, South Korean KOSPI index sold off 8%, triggering circuit breakers for the second time in 3 days. Again, South Korea is just an over-levered hot mess right now, and that volatility is going crazy. We had a big sell-off 2 days ago, then we had a big dead cat bounce. Now another big sell-off after the circuit breakers tripped and the markets came back on. It ended up closing down about 6% off the lows of the day. But man, tech volatility is running rampant here. Case in point, SoftBank. All right, Masa-san, who has just bet the entire farm on OpenAI, raised all this money, borrowed against everything he could possibly borrow against. SoftBank sold off 13% yesterday on that news of OpenAI considering delaying their IPO. But that's all right. Maybe SoftBank could just leverage their position in WeWork. Remember, Masa-san was one of the big financiers of WeWork back in the day. So might have to take some of those gains and use them to string you along a little bit while you wait for the OpenAI IPO. Meanwhile, we've got Bitcoin has a five handle. We're under 60,000, at least as of when I hit record in Bitcoin. And we got to talk about strategy here, guys. Strategy and stretch. The numbers do not look good. That stretch, the MicroStrategy preferred stock that's supposed to be pegged at $100, yeah, it's trading at 74 right now, which means if you bought that thing at par value, you've already lost 2 years worth of dividends in about 8 months of holding the stock. Again, the lawsuits, I'm telling you, man, the lawyers are out there ginning up those lawsuits as we speak. The way they marketed stretch to low information investors, comparing it to things like money market funds. Oh, the lawyers are just going to have a field day with that one. And I'm sure there'll be some sailor bro in the comments who's going to be like, oh, but the fine print said there was no guarantee of the price or anything. Yeah, nobody with fine print ever got sued and lost before, right? That fine print is a shield that protects you from anything fraudulent. No, of course not. All right. Also going on, it was a big news day yesterday and overnight, man. We've got Iran has attacked another ship. The container ship, the Ever Lovely, was struck in the bridge by a drone yesterday. No reports of any casualties or environmental damage, but this was one of the ships that was taking that alternate route to the south towards Oman that the UN had set up. And Iran was squawking on Channel 16 yesterday saying this is very dangerous and with ships will doing this will be dealt with. Well, they shot at boats. And yes, for those who are wondering, that sure as hell is a violation of the Memorandum of Understanding. And I'm sure all of you guys who, no matter what happens, everybody just goes, oh, but Israel, because that's just fashionable to do these days. Remember, Israel never signed the freaking MOU, so Israel can't violate an agreement that they're not party to. But the Iranians sure as shit did sign that MOU, and they just blew up a boat when they said they wouldn't. As my moderator put it this morning, Mish and I were talking, there is a lot of FU energy coming out of Tehran right now. Look, this war was stupid to begin with, to start it, to begin with. And the thing is, once you're in a war, you better fight with everything you have, all out. If you fight half-assed, you're going to lose. Well, we fought half-assed. And so the only thing dumber than kicking this hornet's nest and starting this war to begin with was trying to end it the way we are ending it, making Iran even more belligerent and aggressive than they were to begin with. This MOU is not going to hold, guys. The fighting will restart any day now. It essentially did. We just opted not to shoot back yesterday. I don't know how long that's going to hold there. But, you know, they're finding out the hard way that it's not easy to unkick a hornet's nest. Now, also going on this morning, Zohran Mamdani, the socialist, dare I say communist mayor of New York City, has gotten his rent freeze. The New York City Rent Guidelines Board froze rents for up to two years yesterday for something like over a million housing units in New York City. And well, that's not going to help you commercial real estate investors that are out there, not even a little bit. And there is one bank in particular that I have mentioned several times on this show and in some of my Twitter spaces and other appearances that you need to keep an eye on because of this one. We'll talk about what that bank is. We've got Volkswagen could be laying off up to 100,000 people. The situation in the European auto market is not getting any better. We were just talking yesterday or the day before that about how impossible it must be to run a business in Germany with power prices the way they are, given that heat wave that's ongoing. And then now we've got factories shutting down and 100,000 people potentially losing their jobs at Volkswagen. We've got a rather hilarious story from Russia's TASS, that's a Russian state-owned or state-run media channel, talking about how they are currently restructuring logistics around the fuel systems in Russia. And by restructuring logistics, it means the Iranian or the Ukrainians blew up their existing logistics, and now they're having to find alternative routes to get fuel to the country because nobody can get any gas in apparently at least six regions of the country where they've had some form of rationing implemented. But they want to assure everybody that everything's fine. This is just unscheduled maintenance, if you will. Something is about to give in the Ukraine-Russia conflict here, guys. The energy supplies have gotten awful waffly. In Russia, there's a lot happening around Crimea. It's either going to be a big escalation or the Russians are going to pull out. I don't know what form it's going to take. And last but not least, we got to talk about this private credit fund. Shout out to we'll show this one. I don't even know how to talk this one. Leila Cooney posted this yesterday on X, and I was unaware of this. There's this private credit fund that has had redemptions gated for more than 4 years. Since 2022, they have limited redemptions in this fund. And you'll never guess what this fund is made of. Yes, it's actually pretty easy to guess what this fund is made of because it's something I've been warning about pretty much this whole freaking time. Buy now, pay later loans. That's right. A private credit fund made up of BNPL loans that has halted redemptions for 4 years. And wait till you see the loans that make up this fund. And all I can tell you is I've been saying it, I don't know, since 2023 now. I don't remember the first time I did a video about a firm, but I have been saying the delinquency numbers they're reporting at that company do not pass the sniff test. I've been warning you about their CEO, Max Levkin, and his body language during interviews when he gets asked about these delinquencies. That MFer is the worst poker player you could ever meet. That guy is, I've been saying, it makes the hair on my neck stand up when he talks. I can just tell he's lying through his teeth, or I have a hunch he's lying through his teeth. And you can see some of that in this private credit fund and all these loans that have been sitting there since 2022. Well, but I'm sure these people are good for it. I'm sure they'll be paying it back just any day now. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back on Monday and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every business day, even when Jack is on vacation. And right now, the S&P 500 is in the red ahead of the opening bell. We are down about 40 points, about a little more than 0.5% in the red. We've got the Dow is down by 97.5 points, or 0.19%. The Dow actually managed to close positive yesterday, despite that 1,000-point drop at the open for the NASDAQ. And by 1,000-point drop, guys, it went from positive nearly 700 points to negative 300 in a span of about 27 minutes. So it was a net drop of 1,000. Speaking of the NASDAQ, looking here, we are down another 400 points this morning, 1.38%. But check your clocks, guys, and check the indexes, because, man, we've had some crazy openings the last few days and some wild swings. Maybe today's going to be another case of that. I just couldn't tell you. Looking over at the DXY, we've got the dollar's a little bit weaker this morning, down by 24 basis points or 0.24%, but still 101.19. The dollar has had a pretty good couple of weeks. Looking over at the bond market, we've got a mixed bag in bond yields. The 30-year yield is higher by 2 basis points and change at 4.881. The 10-year is unchanged at 4.389. That's about 30 basis points off its highs from mid-May right now. The 2-year yield is at 4.102, down by 2 points, and the 1-month is unchanged at 3.676%. Looking over at commodities, we've got metals are finally catching a bid here this morning. Spot gold is higher by $25, or about 0.65% at $4,053 an ounce. Spot silver is up about $84, or 1.5% at $58.76. I like the shiny. Copper is higher by 0.57%. Platinum is higher by a little more than 1%. Palladium is up by about 1.6%. And crude oil is lower again here. Oil did stage a little bit of a rally yesterday on that news of the ship getting hit in the strait, but not very much at all. Currently sitting at $69.44 for August WTI futures, lower by $2.50, or 3.5% here. Oil is relentlessly bearish. Relentlessly bearish. Even Iranians blowing up boats in the strait will not move prices here. Now let's talk about Bitcoin. It's lower by another $500 here, $59,200 per Bitcoin. We hit a low yesterday of 58,000. Even we have broken through the 60s here, guys. I have set my eyes on 49,000 as possibly a low for this Bitcoin halving cycle. If that level doesn't hold, we're probably heading into the high 20s. 49,000 also, by the way, that was the price right around the time that they implemented Bitcoin ETFs. And most people who bought Bitcoin ETFs are now underwater on their positions, it's worth pointing out. But we can't talk about Bitcoin without talking about strategy. Look at this stretch. This is MicroStrategy or Strategy's preferred dividend, their infinite money glitch. It's supposed to be pegged to $100. Strategy said, don't worry, if it goes below 100, we could always raise the dividend and then people will bid it back up to 100. And if it goes above 100, we'll issue shares, bringing the price down and then use the proceeds to buy more Bitcoin, because that's what Michael Saylor says. No matter what happens, we're just going to poof, make some magic money and buy more Bitcoin. I don't care if I have to sell both of my kidneys and then use a colostomy bag for the rest of my life. As long as I roll the proceeds into Bitcoin, we're all going to be rich. Yeah. Funny thing about infinite money glitches, when the market turns, they turn into doom loops. And I've had so many people in the comments on my Twitter feed over the last few months who have been unable to grasp the fact that this stretch, when it's 15-point yield, that is not a selling point, that is a big, giant warning sign to investors. Who in their right mind would borrow money at 15%? And the answer is somebody who can't borrow money at 14%. And why can't he borrow at 14%? Because he probably can't pay it back, because it's a risky bet. And maybe, just maybe, that 15% yield means your principal, your capital, is at risk if you buy this. Lo and behold, if you ignored that warning, you're now sitting at $73 ahead of the opening bell in Stretch shares here. You have lost more than 2 years' worth of dividend yield in about 8 months. This thing was always marketed to low information investors. What can I say? Now, this is Strategy's website where they basically put their whole balance sheet on display. You can see here they own 847,000 Bitcoin. That is a huge amount of Bitcoin. Now, the other thing you have to point out here is their U.S. dollar reserves here. Strategy does have cash. They have $1.4 billion in cash. But the annual dividends that they're paying on Stretch is $1.7 billion, which means some point in the next 12 months, Strategy is going to have to raise more money either by issuing shares or by borrowing it. And they've already got $6.7 billion in debt, and I doubt people are eager to lend them more money right now, so they're almost certainly going to issue more MicroStrategy shares. By the way, that's $6.7 billion in debt. That comes with a substantial debt service cost. So how is Strategy going to get the money they need to pay these dividends and to pay this debt service cost? They'll probably have to sell some Bitcoin. The last time they sold Bitcoin, they only sold 32 Bitcoin, a paltry of almost $10,000 in Bitcoin. So Strategy is levered up to the fingers on the wall. They are going to have to dilute their shareholders. That's in MSTR, not in Stretch. And that's why over the last year, Strategy has dumped 78%, even as underlying Bitcoin has dropped about 50, 55%. There's a lot of dilution on the horizon for Strategy shareholders. Be careful, guys. All right, but let's talk about the big story here. South Korean stocks tumble again, triggering second trading halt this week. South Korean shares slumped more than 8%, prompting regulators to halt trading for the second time this week as jitters over the valuations of companies riding the AI boom rattled the world's best performing market this year. The benchmark Kospi tumbled 8.1% Friday afternoon, erasing Thursday's gains as investors grew concerned that the rapid growth in profits of chip manufacturers that supply the AI industry could top out. Reflecting how volatile trading of South Korean stocks has become, regulators briefly suspended trading again in an effort to steady the market. SK Hynix and Samsung Electronics, which have been dueling for the title of South Korea's most valuable company and account for more than 50% of the Kospi's market value, suffered sharp reversals on Friday, extending a roller coaster run that has seen them swing more like meme stocks. NVIDIA supplier SK Hynix slumped 9.2% and Samsung fell 7.7%. Good God, two stocks make up more than 50% of the index. Talk about bad breath. Some analysts have pinned the severity of declines by the Kospi on rampant speculation from individuals and traders using borrowed money to turbocharge bets, you think? In a bearish development, Apple raised the prices of its Macs and iPads early Thursday morning, unsettling investors who are concerned it could sap demand for chips. The sell-off reached other Asian markets anchored by large semiconductor companies that have hit record highs this year on the AI boom. Japan's Nikkei stock average declined 4.8%, led lower by a 13% drop in the share price of SoftBank, which has been seen as a proxy for the AI trade. And SoftBank has just bet everything they possibly have on OpenAI. Analysts pointed to a report that ChatGPT maker OpenAI is considering delaying its initial public offering. We'll get to that story in just a minute. But first, we got to look at the Kospi. This is yesterday after the open. You see a big gap down at the open for the Kospi. Came all the way down 8.1%. They hit the circuit breakers. And then it did manage to stage a little bit of a relief rally, closing down just under 6% lower. And let's set this back to daily candles so you can see here the volatility over the last couple of days. Some awful big red candles. Here was that 10% decline we had a few days ago. Then another big decline yesterday or overnight, we'll say. By the way, I mentioned that that was the second circuit breaker in 3 days. Correction, that is the second circuit breaker in 4 days. I was way off. But still, man, a lot of volatility in South Korean stocks. And look at the run these stocks have had over the last year or so. Absolutely ripping since the start of 2025. As money is just aimlessly, brainlessly poured into AI because some guy in Silicon Valley said something about cancer or colonizing Mars. Everybody just decided to invest everything they had in this pipe dream. And we may be watching it go up in smoke in real time. Moments after Apple announced that they were raising their prices, we've got Microsoft lifts price of Xbox consoles due to soaring component costs. This is basically the same story as Apple. These were separated by about an hour and a half yesterday. Let's just go to the price hikes. Starting August 1st, Xbox Series S consoles with 512 gigabytes of storage will go up by $100 to about $500. Okay, that's a 25% increase due to the increase in memory costs. That's a big 25% input to the CPI that we're going to have to somehow hedonically adjust that away. Microsoft said Thursday, while models with 1 terabyte will increase by $150 more. And the wording is interesting here. Does that mean it's going to go up by $250 or just $150? I don't know. The entry-level Xbox X will now start at about $750. Microsoft raising prices of consoles, Apple raising prices of laptops and iPads. But don't worry, guys, inflation's only 3%, according to CPI, or 4%. And on the same day, OpenAI leans toward waiting until 2027 for IPO, the New York Times says. This one broke just after the close yesterday, definitely contributing to the sell-off in Asian shares. I don't know what was the bigger story, to be honest with you, driving that sell-off in Asia. Was it the OpenAI delay or was it Apple? I'm leaning towards OpenAI because of that big move in SoftBank. OpenAI is leaning toward holding off an IPO until 2027, the New York Times reported, citing three people involved in the company's deliberations. Bankers advising the ChatGPT maker on its IPO plans cautioned that recent volatility in tech stocks, as well as in SpaceX shares following its record IPO, could dampen enthusiasm for retail investors for OpenAI's offering, the newspaper reported. Sam Altman, the AI company's CEO, pushed advisors, including bankers and lawyers, to target a $1 trillion valuation, the Times said. OpenAI is working with Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley on a potential listing as soon as the fall. We have not decided on timing yet. It may be a while because there are things we want to do that are likely easier as a private company, OpenAI said in a statement. This is basically the company's spokesperson saying exactly what CFO Sarah Friar said a few weeks ago. But it's a complicated set of trade-offs, and this gives us the option to go public sooner if that ends up being the best. Okay, that was the statement from June 9th. That's the same statement they made 2 weeks ago. So they haven't differed from that position. But now they're considering delaying it, probably because their books are a freaking mess and they know as soon as they open it up that that's it for this bubble. Meanwhile, we got another missile flying, or I think this was a drone. Iran behind attack on cargo vessel near Oman and Strait of Hormuz, a U.S. official tells MS Now. Iran was behind an attack on a cargo ship near the coast of Oman and the Strait of Hormuz Thursday. CNBC has asked the White House if the attack is a violation of the United States Memorandum of Understanding with Iran that has paused hostilities in the region for 60 days to give time for peace talks to develop a permanent end to the war. This is a stupid paragraph. CNBC has asked the White House if this violates the MOU. CNBC, you know this violates the MOU. You just want to hear the Trump people admit it so you can use that as a talking point. All right. It is. We all know it is. All right. When we say we're not going to shoot and you shoot, that's a violation. More news at 11. United Kingdom Maritime Trade Operations, the British Maritime Security Alert Service, earlier Thursday said in a post on X that the cargo vessel passing through the strait near Dahit, Oman, had been hit by an unknown projectile on its starboard side, causing damage to the bridge. The ship reported no casualties and no environmental impact, according to the UK MTO. It was a container ship known as the Ever Lovely that was hit, flagged in Singapore. The report by also, the Iranians are basically saying we're not going to use our unfrozen funds to buy American corn or soybeans either. Again, Mish summarized it pretty well this morning when he said there's a lot of FU energy coming out of Tehran right now. And look, we did nothing about this. We issued a stern warning. Whoa, okay, easy, buddy. That escalated quickly. Not a stern warning. We opted not to shoot back. The Iranians are blowing up boats again. This ceasefire is not going to hold, guys. I mean, we can all see it, right? At this point, it's pretty obvious the Iranians are just going to continue to push and push until they encounter resistance. And they are yet to encounter that, so they will continue pushing. All right. Been warning about this one for a couple of months as well. New York City freezes rents for 1 million apartments in Mayor Mamdani victory. I hope you like communism because that's what you're getting, NYC. A New York City Housing Board voted on Thursday to freeze the rents for about 1 million regulated apartments for up to 2 years, fulfilling a central campaign promise of Mayor Zohran Mamdani only months into his term. The 7-1 vote by the city's Rent Guidelines Board set increases at zero on both 1-year and 2-year leases from October. Hundreds of tenants who crowded into the Manhattan Museum Auditorium cheered and blew whistles at the result. "This is a historic victory for New York City tenants," Mamdani said in a statement. "This is the relief that working people across the city deserve." The vote was the culmination of a weeks-long, noisy annual ritual that determines how much landlords can increase what they charge for rent-stabilized apartments. Home to about a quarter of New Yorkers, the board weighs factors including wages, inflation, maintenance costs, taxes, and landlords' incomes. The average monthly rent for a regulated apartment was $1,600, according to the 2025 study, in a city where the median rent for a newly leased apartment is $3,950. Mamdani, a Democratic socialist who has promised to make the city more affordable, has appointed 6 of the board's 9 members since he took office in January, choosing people he believes are sympathetic to tenants. At public hearings in the run-up to the vote, tenants demanded a rent freeze, something that happened 3 times under Mayor Bill de Blasio in 2015 and 2021 for 1-year leases only, or even a rent decrease, saying incomes were not keeping up with inflation and soaring bills, which they're not. Landlord groups contend a rent freeze would only make it harder for property owners to maintain their buildings and said some were not able to cover their mortgages. And it's that last paragraph that's important here. All right. No, I don't like seeing rent go up for poor people. I'm sure some communist a-hole is going to say that in the comments. But I also don't like the government telling me what the price of my stuff is, and that includes where I live. And we've seen as the New York City Rent Guidelines Board has gotten more and more involved in this process, the conditions that these people live in have gotten worse and worse for the same reason. These landlords, many of whom are corrupt slumlord a-holes as well, are not maintaining their buildings. And when they lose money because they're not allowed to raise the price, but their ownership costs keep going up, guess what? Those places don't become nicer to live in, that's for sure. When the landlord goes broke, they don't fix things. And also, we've got this commercial real estate crisis going on here. You guys may have noticed over the last few years, buildings aren't worth what they used to be worth. What do you think this is going to do to it? Which brings me to this name, Flagstar Bank. And full disclosure, I have a short on Flagstar Bank. I bought puts in this one not too long ago. Flagstar Bank is the rebranded New York Community Bank. And you may recall from 2024, this bank almost failed because of losses in loans tied to rent-stabilized buildings in New York City. Those loans were going bad at an alarming rate. The bank was losing money. They almost failed until former Trump Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin came in with $1 billion, bailed out the bank, and then appointed Michael Otting, who's also a former Trumper, the former controller of the currency. He's now the CEO of Flagstar Bank. And they've been trying to turn around this bank. They've been slowly unwinding their positions. They sold off, I think, about a quarter of the debt that they hold tied to these rent-controlled buildings. But they still hold more than $10 billion worth of debt tied to these buildings that the owners are already losing money, and now they're not allowed to raise the rent for 2 years. And they own enough of this debt to wipe out all of this bank's capital, probably 2 or 3 times over. And so, I got a short on this one because I think we're going to see a wave of defaults on New York City landlords. I think that's what Mamdani wants, because he wants the city to take over these buildings and government-run housing. It worked out so well in the freaking Soviet Union. It's going to just be even better in New York City. And you can see this big decline in 2024. That's when New York Community Bank almost failed. Mnuchin came in. New York Community Bank also bought up most of the distressed real estate assets from Signature Bank, which failed in 2023 when Silicon Valley went bank. That was the 3rd, 4th, and 5th largest bank failures in U.S. history. So this is just the culmination of several bank stories, bank problems, near failures or outright failures that were never resolved. They just kicked the can down the road. And now Mamdani's rent freeze sure as shit ain't going to help any of that. Back across the pond to Europe, Volkswagen eyes cutting 100,000 jobs and closing plants, report says. That is a lot of jobs going away at Volkswagen. Volkswagen is looking to cut tens of thousands of additional jobs and may shutter factories in a push by CEO Oliver Blume to make Europe's biggest automaker more competitive, Manager magazine reported. The plans presented by the CEO during a management board meeting earlier this week include doubling staff reductions to as many as 100,000, Manager magazine reported Friday, citing people familiar with the matter. The Porsche and Audi owner currently employs about 657,000 people. Bloom has been trying to slim down Volkswagen as it grapples with U.S. tariffs, persistent weakness in China, and mounting competition in Europe from rivals including BYD and Stellantis. His new strategy will be presented to the supervisory board next month and likely marks the opening position in what could be months of tense negotiations. At Volkswagen, restructuring often gets watered down by labor leaders and state politicians that together have a blocking majority in the body. Volkswagen's streamlining efforts underscore the German industry's broader struggles. Mercedes-Benz plans to discuss deeper cost cuts with labor representatives, while BMW earlier this month issued a drastic profit warning that sent its shares tumbling. All right, so the silver lining here, I guess the government and the union gets a say in these job cuts, and so maybe the 100,000 is just the high ball that Volkswagen is leading with, hoping to secure some lower number than that. So, I mean, maybe it won't be 100,000 people that lose their jobs, but it's going to be tens of thousands of people getting cut. European industry just can't compete here, guys. All right, and as they often say, Russia continues to win historic victories even closer and closer to their own capital, or at least that's what they would have you believe. In TASS, this is the Russian state news agency, who says Russia currently has sufficient fuel reserves. That's according to their energy minister, Novak, even though they have rationed fuel all over the country. Pardon our appearance while we make some changes, is what he's saying here. Moscow, sufficient fuel volumes have now been secured in Russia to supply the domestic market, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak told TASS. We have sufficient fuel on the market, he said, when asked whether reserves are sufficient and whether an increase in supply should be expected. The authorities are currently restructuring logistics within the fuel market to meet demand, Novak said, adding that balancing the market will take some time. All right. So don't worry, guys. They're just restructuring logistics. Or maybe destructuring is a better term, because the Ukrainians blew it up. Yeah, a little bit of restructuring. Some changes are being made, mostly because the stuff is on fire. The Ukrainian drone attacks in Russia have been devastating to the Russian fuel economy. Russia has already banned the export of gasoline and liquefied natural gas, I believe, or two other fuels. They're now considering banning the export of diesel as well. This is propaganda, guys. This is a serious deal, what's going on with the fuel in Russia. And now the Russians are relocating their air defenses closer to the capital, closer to Moscow. Again, historic victories, closer and closer to their own capital. That's what the propagandists would have you think. And when you redeploy air defenses, you leave other areas vulnerable, just like the U.S. has had to redeploy air defenses from South Korea and other places in the South China Sea to the Middle East to defend against Iranian drones, for all the good that did. You leave other areas vulnerable when you do that. Drones are making a mess around the world. Russia is no exception. Something is about to change in this conflict, something big. I don't know if it's going to be for the better or the worse, but there is a big change coming. Keep your eye on this story, guys. All right. And then we got to talk about this one. At this private credit fund, exits have been restricted for 4 years and counting. Wealth advisors fear it could be many more years before investors get all their money out of the fund, which invests in consumer and small business debt. And there's a big cheaping dose of I told you so in this story. Investors stuck in private credit funds are wondering how long they will have to wait to get all their money out. One fund offers a cautionary tale, 4 years and counting. The Stone Ridge Alternative Lending Risk Premium Fund, also known as Lendex, has limited the amount of money that investors can withdraw for 16 consecutive quarters, according to people familiar with the fund. One wealth manager estimates it could take 6 more years to get all of his clients' money out of the fund, which specializes in a niche corner of the private credit world. As more investors have rushed to exit from the fund, getting money out has gotten harder. In September of 2022, Lendex investors received 85% of what they asked for in cash, according to an investor update published by the Journal. This month, they got 12%, the people said. They're getting about a tenth of what they ask for. Now, we have seen this across the private credit industry, but this fund is particularly bad. Why is this fund so bad? Well, look at what is in it. At Lendex, which had $2.2 billion in total assets as of the end of February, redemption requests show no signs of letting up. In the first quarter, they reached about 60% of the fund, people familiar with the matter said. Most private credit funds that are seeing elevated requests this year specialize in loans to companies bought by private equity firms. But Lendex's holdings, by contrast, are mostly loans to consumers and small businesses that were made by fintech lenders, including Affirm, SoFi, Stripe, and Upstart, part of an expanding corner of the private credit universe. In other words, this is buy now, pay later debt in this fund. And they are 60% requests for withdrawals. They've been limited for 16 quarters. And I got to send a shout out to Layla Cooney on X, who posted this, says it's an interesting fund. Thousands of pages of BNPL loans, some with $2 fair values, literally $2, no zeros in the loans made up in these funds. So let's talk about some of the loans in here, all right? This is very small print here, guys, so I apologize if you can't read it, but I'll just describe what I'm seeing here. Everything in this column, these are the names of the loans themselves. They're a convoluted mix of characters. The platform that they were sold on, these are all shown here, all Affirm loans. The original dates, some of these go all the way back to 2022, up until more recently this February. So some of these are four-year-old buy now, pay later loans. There's the principal amount, there's what the fund paid for the loan, and the current fair value of the fund. And I want to zoom in on a couple of these examples here, like this one in the middle of the page that was issued on September 27th of 2024. The original principal amount was $1,203, and it's currently fairly valued at $1,205. It's been a year and a half, and this guy has not made any payments. The principal is still exactly where it was. And Affirm tells us, remember, Affirm is reassuring us that the delinquencies in their loans, they're only about 2.5%, even though Max Levkin like purses his lips and touches his face and gets uneasy in his chair every time he's asked about delinquencies. Oh my God, that guy has so many tells. But yeah, this loan from a year and a half ago has not been paid down at all, but they're still carrying it at fair value of what's owed against it. And then this other loan that Layla Cooney points out here, that's got a $2 balance on it. This loan was taken out September 22nd of 2022. That is nearly a four-year-old loan. The original amount was $23, and the guy, almost four years later, still owes $2. Do you think he's going to pay off that $2 really after 4 years? Aren't most of these loans are like buy in four or pay down in 6 months? 4 years later, they're still carrying this loan on their books at $2. But remember, Affirm says delinquencies are only 2.4%. Most of these people pay it back, even though there's ample data showing that the average credit score of a buy now, pay later user is subprime, and that there's rising delinquencies in autos, rising to sky high record delinquencies in autos, near record delinquencies in credit cards, rising delinquencies in mortgages. They're still pretty low, but they're rising. And yet somehow all of these lenders who on paper are like the most dog shit, deadbeat borrowers you could imagine, somehow they're all paying back their loans, even though this data says they're not. But remember, how have they gotten away with that? Because they package that shit up into a bond and they sell it to investors. Or in this case, they package it up into a private credit fund. They sold it to investors. And for 4 years, they've told those investors they can't have their money back. This buy now, pay later, guys, I'm telling you, what I've been saying it for years, what these guys are telling us does not pass the sniff test. It defies simple logic. The simplest answer is they're lying and that they're not being paid back. Here it is on the screen in front of you, proving that's the case. Layla Cooney, awesome post. Thank you for posting that one. Check her out on X, guys. Awesome feed there. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Hey, don't forget that like button before you click off and that subscribe button for you new guys so we can see everybody on Monday. Now, today is Friday. This is normally when we would get together for our weekly Q&A on Zoom with my Patreon Buying Me a Coffee and YouTube supporters. But you may have noticed I am on the vacay this week, so we are moving our weekly Q&A to Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I put out that link yesterday. If you want to check that out, there's links to all that Patreon and good stuff down below in the description, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.